Chapter 11. He must have gone straight to the office and written this shit up to make the deadline last night. Vic lowered the paper and looked at the bear and me. What time was it?
Right after midnight. I sipped my coffee, took a final bite of my pre-breakfast toast, slipped dog a crust, and eyed my compatriots across the kitchen table.
Does he call me a vindictive prick?
She studied the article.
Did you really threaten him with Henry?
I looked out the kitchen window at the barely perceptible dawn, the serrated band of apricot-colored horizon reflecting off the taller buildings downtown. Vaguely. Henry joined the conversation.
In what sense?
I told him you'd have probably broken his neck, on purpose or not.
He nodded.
A safe presumption.
He took the paper from Vic. There was a thumping noise from the living room, and the party grew by one.
I wish you sons of bitches would learn to keep your voices down.
Lucian stomped into the kitchen, wearing nothing but boxers, a tank top, and his ubiquitous Stetson open road hat, his cane in his right hand.
What the hell's going on in here?
He poured himself a cup of coffee and turned to look at us.
Old man, I'd appreciate it if you'd put on some clothes and your leg, not necessarily in that order, before my daughter and granddaughter wake up.
He sipped his coffee, finally focusing his bloodshot eyes on me.
Can't find it.
Your leg?
He nodded toward the beast under the table.
I think that critter ran off with it.
He took another sip and watched as Henry read the article.
What's with the paper?
Vic gestured toward me. Your protege has taken to threatening reporters. Using the back of one of the chairs to balance himself, the old sheriff hopped over and sat at the table with us, reaching down and petting Dog to show there were no hard feelings.
Well, there's hope for him yet, isn't there, you big bastard?
I nodded toward the backyard. Mike Barr was here last night, staking the place out. He sipped his coffee some more.
Well, you ain't exactly hard to find these days.
I guess he wanted a scoop. I think he figured he could get something out of me if he was on my side. Henry tossed the paper to the center of the table, on top of a bowl of fruit. The Star Tribune didn't do us any favors. His fingers sprang up and then thumped the table.
You know, it would do the people of this state well to realize that not everybody we go up against is either innocent or well-meaning.
Someone started knocking at the door, and all of us turned toward it before looking at one another. Lucian grimaced.
Who in the hell is that this time of morning?
I'm betting it's the Fourth Estate. Lucian made a move.
I'll talk to him.
Henry got up, stopping the old sheriff with a hand, and moved toward the door. Whoever it was knocked again.
I will get this.
We listened as he crossed the living room. He snatched the door open and leaned forward with intent, causing whoever it was to stumble backward.
Can I help you?
Is this the residence of Katie Longmire?
The Cheyenne Nation's voice was low and sharp.
There is a child in this house. Do you know what time it is?
Lucian picked up the paper and glanced at it before turning it toward me. The headline read, Long Arm of the Law Reaches into the Past with a Vengeance. Pulling the handle of my duffel farther up onto my shoulder, I braved the wind and walked the length of town. I was about to take the cutoff toward the highway when a cream-colored sedan with white-walled tires pulled up to the curb beside me.
You look like you need a lift.
I stared at the familiar face that appeared in the driver's side window of the Plymouth Belvedere and recognized John Schaefer.
Where are you headed?
I nodded in the direction of the highway.
Giving it up, huh?
I stared down at my boots as a few flurries swept past.
I don't think I'm cut out to be a lawman.
He nodded.
Maybe I can make you a better deal.
Than the law?
Than hitching.
I stuffed my fist into my jacket pockets.
How about I give you this car?
I didn't say anything, so he climbed out.
I know we got off on the wrong foot, but I need somebody to go over to the state hospital with me.
I shook my head.
Listen, I've been visiting my brother in that place every month since he was convicted, and I've never gone alone.
Why? He snorted.
You ever been?
No. He gestured toward the car.
My parents went out and bought this boat for Ed when he went off to college.
Damn thing's got only about 6,000 miles on it.
He looked at me, his larger eye holding me in check.
I gotta get rid of the thing, 'cause the place where I keep it is getting torn down. I don't want it, never wanted it. Too many memories. And Lord knows my brother doesn't need it.
I nodded, but still didn't say anything.
You seem like a stand-up guy, so here's the deal. You come with me to visit my brother, and then give me a ride back to the Western Star, and I'll sign the pink slip over to you. When you get wherever you're going, you can just send me whatever you think the thing is worth.
He stood there studying me for a long while. He gestured toward the idling monstrosity.
1 hour's work for a car?
He ran a hand over the glossy surface of the front fender.
She's underpowered with the slant six, but she's in fine shape. And hell, she's better than walking, wherever you're going.
I had to admit he had a point. The cold was likely to worsen as the day progressed, and maybe I'd catch a ride, but maybe I wouldn't. The Belvedere wasn't my idea of a dream car, but it had a heater, and beggars should avoid being choosers on I-80 in the winter.
1 hour?
He nodded, and then started toward the Plymouth. I walked around the long hood.
1 hour.
Schaefer climbed in, and I glanced around once more, weighing my options one last time, before I pulled the handle and got in, tossing my duffel into the back. He pulled out, continuing down the street past the turnoff of the highway, and then took a sweeping left turn. After a few minutes, the town seemed to break up, giving way to a pastoral landscape. We drove in silence until we reached the hospital's main gate, the only impediment in both directions as far as I could see.
I promised my family that I'd visit him for as long as he lived.
He rolled down the window. A young man in a security uniform who looked to be about 12 lowered his head and smiled in at us.
How are you, John?
I'm good, Brian. How are you? The young man glanced inside. This is Deputy Longmire, and he's with me.
Can I see some ID, Deputy?
I took out my billfold and handed it to him with my driver's license inside. He examined it and made a notation and then handed my wallet back.
Thank you, sir.
Schaefer drove toward a large, square brick building that looked about 100 years old and pulled across the street underneath a copse of leafless cottonwoods.
A national historic building now. Used to call it just the insane asylum back then, before a devastating fire on September 11, 1917. At that point, they renamed it the Hospital for the Insane, the word asylum having gone out of favor. When they built the hall for the criminally insane in 1935, they called the wings Absaroka and Carbon in hopes that people from those counties might provide a little extra for the inmates around the holidays, but that worked only for a couple of years. He pointed. That one's a women's building. Looks all alone out there, but there are tunnels that hardly anybody knows about that connect most all of the buildings. They're still used to bring food and patients back and forth.
He gestured toward I-80.
On the other side of the highway is a cemetery, but most of the markers just have dates and patient numbers on them. You should hear the stories.
His voice trailed off. I thought about the individuals who had been shunned by society, forgotten even by their own families, and a slight shudder ran through me that had nothing to do with the cold.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Who is Annie Welsh?
He studied me.
Somebody been telling you stories out of school?
Lucian mentioned her. He sighed and gestured toward the building.
Probably the most dangerous prisoner in the criminal wing. Farm wife out of Goshen County. Up and killed her 3 children one day with a butcher knife. Killed her husband when he came home, and then went over to the next farm and killed another couple with the same knife.
Insane?
I'll say. All the way through the trial, all she'd do was repeat the same thing over and over. I didn't mean to do it.
He turned to look at me again, before pulling the handle on his door.
Not to worry, she's locked up good and tight.
He got out, and when I followed suit, he tossed the keys over.
All yours.
I haven't done anything yet. He ignored me and crossed the street to where a large, overweight man in a white shirt and black slacks stood at the top of the steps with his arms folded.
John.
Bernard.
Bad day at Black Rock.
Sheriff Schaefer stopped at the bottom of the steps and looked up at the heavy-set man.
You don't say.
I do.
We had a 2-man unlock with him this morning.
trying to get him to come out for breakfast and exercise. So everybody got some exercise? Not funny. The new guy ended up damn near getting an eye torn out. Ed always was touchy on the subject of eyes. The man didn't say anything more, but simply turned and entered the building. Schaefer glanced back at me. Come on. We walked through a general reception area and then a steel door that opened into a hallway that led to a smaller room, bare except for an empty desk and six chairs lined against the green two-tone walls. There was a window looking into another office where a woman was typing on a Selectric. How many guards are there? Schaefer eyed me again. Two. Only two for both wings? There was only one till 57, when the new warden requested another. He sighed. Everybody in these wards knows they have to look after themselves, more or less. We waited until the heavyset guy returned. Ignoring Schaefer, he looked at me. Got any weapons, pocket knife or such? I pulled the stag-handled knife from my jeans and then took my .45, still in the holster, out of the duffel, handing both to him. He passed my things through the window to someone I couldn't see and then turned back to us. We got a protocol, and as long as you follow it, we won't have any trouble. Once he'd outlined the rules, we followed him through another security door and down a hall until we came to a steel-grated opening that he unlocked, then locked again once we'd passed through.
Welcome to the tomb, Deputy Longmire.
As he lumbered down the steps, I noticed the walls turned to concrete, which gave way to slip-formed stone, giving an indication of just how old the building was. The tired fluorescents were buzzing and blinking and giving off a strange bluish light. All I could think was that Schaefer was right. An hour in this place was more than plenty. There was a dark hallway to the right of the stairs, which I assumed was part of the tunnel system that ran between the buildings, where every 20 feet or so, a protected light bulb gave out with a feeble yellow pool. At the next steel grate, a man was sitting at a desk. He nodded to the turnkey and the sheriff in turn, and then looked at me, and I noticed when he turned his head that his eye was completely covered with a bandage. Just so you guys know, I've got a patient over in Carbon that I have to escort for meds in 5 minutes. Bernard nodded, and the man stood and unlocked the gate, allowing us to continue into a hallway where we stood, looking at a row of doors on either side, heavy iron doors with paint that had chipped through the years, a color catalog of the history of the place. Each cell had a number above the door, a thick knob that stuck out at about eye level, where a small barrier could be slid aside to provide visual access, and a lower, larger door that worked the same way, which I assumed was used to pass food in and out. I hope you're not claustrophobic. There were two folding chairs leaning against the wall, and the guard handed one to each of us, pausing to glance at Schaefer. You know the rules.
Yes, I do, Barnyard.
The man turned and walked away. Schaefer saw me looking at him with a raised eyebrow and explained,
Doesn't like sheriffs. Ran against Marv Leland twice.
Oh.
I guess now he'll get another shot at the job.
He turned and approached the nearest door, reached out a hand, and gently rapped his knuckles against the rough surface.
Ed, I know you heard us coming.
First there was nothing, but then a voice echoed from inside.
Hey, who you got with you this time?
A deputy friend of mine from up in Absaroka County.
I knew a girl there once.
Ed.
There was a silence.
Hey, what's your name?
Walt Longmire.
There was a noise from down the hall, and Bernard appeared alongside us again.
Schaefer, I got a code with the new guy and could use your help.
The sheriff looked at the door and then at me.
I'm here so often that they've decided I'm part-time help. I'll be right back. Don't do anything. Don't talk to him, but especially don't open that slat. You hear me?
Yep. As he walked off, I thought about how long an hour could be. I was still holding one of the chairs, so I unfolded it and sat down. There was some shuffling inside, and then the prisoner whispered,
You still there?
I didn't answer.
I know you're there because I can hear you breathing.
He shuffled closer, and I could tell he was right on the other side of the door.
I know he told you not to talk to me, but just listen, okay?
I waited.
Would you open that slat so that I can see your face?
I still said nothing.
I know he told you not to open it, but I can't stand talking to someone and not knowing what they look like.
After a few seconds, his voice sounded against the metal door again.
I got too much imagination. That's the problem, see?
Involuntarily, I grunted. He laughed.
I need you to look at me just to make sure I'm still here. Just slide that slat aside, would you?
They told me not to.
Hey, I've got only so much time, but you need to listen to me, because if you don't, more people are going to get killed.
What do you mean?
Open the slat.
No. There was a pause.
My brother. Hey, look, I know I'm crazy, but I'm not the only one.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You gotta listen to me. Please open that slat. I need someone to see me so that I know I'm still here.
I found myself leaning forward and slowly sliding the larger grate to the side where I could see the haunted eyes, one larger than the other.
I wasn't the one that killed those girls.
I sat there silently, thinking about what the man had just said.
Did you hear me? I didn't kill a one of those girls.
There was some yelling and noise coming from the tunnel outside the cage that connected the two halls, and I stood, looking into the darkness.
I'm telling you, mister, my brother arrested me, but I'm not the killer. I was on a date with that girl the night she was killed, but so was John.
There was more noise, so I began walking when I noticed that the cage door was hanging open. Leaning to one side, I could see the tunnel, but not as far as the first light bulb. Taking a few steps, I eased past the doors against the far wall as somebody threw himself against it. I pushed the cage gate the rest of the way open and stepped through, peering down the tunnel where I could see that the light bulbs were on until about halfway, and after that, there was nothing but darkness. I stood there for a moment and then thought that I could see something moving in the shadows. Schaefer? Whatever it was that was moving, it stopped. I glanced back toward Criminal Row, but nothing had changed there. I took another step toward the tunnel and listened, feeling a stillness in my hands and a coolness coming over my face the way it always did. Something moved in the hallway again, and a light bulb exploded, leaving only two between the darkness and me. I slowly zipped up the front of my jacket, figuring a layer of horsehide would be a wise precaution, and then slipped on my gloves, pulling them tight across my knuckles. It was strange that Schaefer and Bernard would both leave me here, but I figured whoever it was that was knocking out the lights was up to no good. I stepped into the middle of the opening, stood up straight to a full 6.5 feet, and spread my arms out a little to make an even larger impression.
Whoever you are, maybe you better step into the light so that I can see you.
Someone whimpered.
I don't want to hurt you, but I don't intend to be hurt myself.
Someone edged into the light just a bit, and I could make out a figure in a long, light-colored smock or dress with some kind of tiny pattern in the fabric, a curled-up, crippled hand twisting and untwisting the cotton up near the shoulder. I raised a hand.
Stop right there.
Whoever it was ceased moving. Whoever it was, they were tall and incredibly thin.
Are you one of the patients here?
Nothing.
Can I help you?
More nothing. I took a step farther into the tunnel.
Look, I don't work here, so I'm not sure who you are or what you need. I'm just trying to be helpful until the regular staff arrives.
I could see in the half shadows that, behind the hair, the patient was female.
Miss?
She studied me. Her eyes were dark, the pupils dense with hardly any reflection in them, and her lip sagged a little on one side. She began keening, like a dog, but higher pitched, like a siren. Her chest swelled, and her breath gave out, but she sucked in savagely and started again, almost pitch perfect to where she had left off.
Miss?
She took a step forward, and I could see her face plainly now. There were dark circles under her eyes, and a pointed chin that was thrust out at me as she continued to emit a sound that wavered between a scream and an aria. I took another step closer. Miss? She jerked back and looked straight at me. The dark eyes focused as she spoke in a high voice.
I didn't mean to do it.
It was about then that I saw the knife. Chapter 12. Press conference this afternoon at 4:30. Late for Friday. The bear nodded, looking down at the alley like a peregrine falcon, and then leaning on the railing. Just enough time to make the announcement and answer a few questions. Vic joined him, but not too many. And then run out the door. He shook his head, flight being the better part of valor in politics. Sitting in the rocking chair, which I had positioned in a pool of sunshine, I leaned back and rocked a bit, Lola sleeping soundly on my chest. Why do you suppose they don't want me there?
Because you might be right.
He turned and looked at me.
In my limited experience with politicians, I have learned that you do not have to be right all the time, but that it is absolutely essential to never appear wrong.
I think I'll do what they want and skip it. By being there would just throw more kerosene on the fire. Vic pushed off the railing, stuck a hand on her hip, and studied me.
Do you mind if I ask how the hell this change of mind happened?
I stared at the redwood planks on the deck where Dog lay snoozing. I think I'm letting my pride get in the way of doing my job. I glanced up, cupping a hand on Lola's back as I repositioned myself. This is not within the strict purview of my job description. She shook her head.
And your purview is?
Law enforcement on a county level. Heck, I'm not even in my county. She glanced at Henry in disbelief and then back at me.
You were asked to be here and testify in a parole hearing for an inmate who isn't able to travel and, as it turns out, isn't capable of even participating in the hearing.
So why don't I just go home?
Because you've been trying to keep him locked up for decades?
Alexia called out to us from the kitchen window.
Sheriff, would you, Miss Vick and Mr. Bear, like some iced tea?
It was tempting, but I was getting antsy. No thanks, Alexia. I think we're going to go out for lunch. I stood and moved toward the door with Dog following.
Do you want to put Lola in her crib?
She appeared in the doorway, pushed open the screen, and took her from me.
Would you like me to wake Mr. Lucian?
No, this is his mid-morning nap, not to be confused with his early afternoon nap or his late afternoon nap. She nodded and disappeared with Dog following, and I turned to the dynamic duo. And then there were three. The bear started down the steps as Vic and I followed.
He seems to be sleeping a lot lately.
My undersheriff shrugged.
Well, he's like 1,000 years old.
We turned the corner and continued our descent.
Have you heard anything from the Home Office?
I spoke with Sizer Pretoria, and he says nobody set fire to the county, if that's what you mean.
I half smiled as we crossed the alley and approached my truck from the rear. Maybe we'll all just head north tomorrow and try not to make this into something about me. Vic looked past me.
What the fuck?
Henry followed her gaze to my windshield, which looked as though someone had fired a mortar through it. I unlocked the door, pulled it open, and watched as a cascade of tiny safety glass chips fell out onto the ground. I glanced around, looking to see what might have fallen through the windshield. The culprit was nestled on the floorboard next to the transfer case shifter. Reaching in, I grabbed the thing and held it up as the Cheyenne Nation opened the passenger side and Vic crowded my shoulder, both of them looking at the item in my hand. Vic summed it up.
It's a rock!
Yep, it is. About the size of a softball, it was in fact a river rock, marbled in complexion, with an explosion of glass dust stuck on one side where it had gone through my windshield. Ignoring the safety hazard, I wiped it off with my glove. Someone had left me a message in heavy black magic marker. Back off. I held it out for Henry to read.
Evidently, they thought that smashing the windshield was not exclamation enough. Her shoulders had swayed, just a bit as if that arm was disconnected from her body, and that's probably why I noticed the knife at all. There were people talking, their voices echoing off the stone walls, but they sounded far away,
unlike her voice which resonated in my head. I slowly stepped to the middle of the hallway, giving myself room to move if I needed to.
Ma'am, I didn't mean to do it.
Is your name Annie? She didn't say anything, but lowered her head a bit so that she was looking at me through the tangle of hair. They said your name is Annie. I thought I could hear more noises behind her, closer this time. She turned her head a bit, but